Now, we have a speaker tonight, today, Joan T., originally from Colonia. We allowed her to move down to South Jersey. And she got a good story. Welcome her.
Thank you, Margaret. Thank you much. Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I was looking for my puzzle, and it's up here. That's I'm trying to have it all together. I don't quite get it all together all the time, but I'm a whole lot better than I used to be. So I will put it on. When Margaret was just saying we all have a piece of the puzzle, I was going, where's mine? I knew I got it when I came in, and I left it here. I'm grateful to be here this morning. My name is Joan. I'm a compulsive overeater, and these rooms have saved my life. I know so many of you here, and so good to see people that I know, and so good to be here with people that I'll just be meeting today for the first time. When Margaret asked me to do this morning, I said, oh, Margaret, I said, you know what, I spoke last year at the panel and whatever, and she said, well, your story, I said, my story is the same, and then I said, well, it's not going to change. I am who I am, and that's my story, it's the same story, and I've been in the rooms by God's grace for 28 years, and these rooms have saved my life. I'm glad to be here, but when Margaret also said to me, go and get your pictures blown up so that we can, instead of just your album going around, you can have some pictures going around. I went, oh, God, I hate those pictures, but I have to remember the pictures, and I have to remember the reason that I'm here. And I did have them blown up. I went to Staples, and I was so hoping that the girl didn't ask me any questions. Nobody cares, you know, behind, but it's always like, oh, my God. So I said to her, can you make these into 8x10s? And she said, oh, sure, let me see. And I was like, oh, God, I hope she doesn't want to know anything about these pictures. The point is, though, I could be back here in a heartbeat, and I need to see these pictures. I carry this one around in my wallet all the time because that was the summer before I came into program. This one I'm not happy with at all. That was my brother-in-law's wedding in 1974. Like I said, I've been here a long time. I haven't been abstinent for 28 years, but I do have a miraculous recovery by God's grace, and I sure don't want to go back here again. So I will, Margaret said, to have some copies made, so I'll have, I had some copies made, and I'll put them around in different places and start them in different areas. I do have an album here that I found some pictures from when I was a very young child. And I was heavy as a very young child. I was chubby in the beginning. It is a progressive disease because I came into these rooms very, very, very overweight, but I kept saying to myself through the years, I would do something about it. I knew I didn't relate to food the way other people related to food. In the pictures that start, I was born in 1942, so I'm 67 years old, and it's taken me a long time to know who I am. This program has given me back the person that I am because I lived for so many years in shame. I was always plump when I was about in eighth grade. I wore clothes that, of course, would hide me because I always wanted to look like the other kids looked. I always wanted to do cheering and whatever. And that was not my path. That was not meant to be. I was always on diets. It was like you hear so many times in these rooms, pills, whatever would work, whatever was going to be the quickest method, the easier, softer way. I was there. I didn't have any clue that this was a disease of three legs. It was spiritual, emotional, and physical. I knew I had the physical. I knew I never ate like the other kids ate. I had experiences in kindergarten where I ate my entire lunch for recess, and the teacher came, and I knew that lunchbox was on the windowsill because we had this old school in Woodbridge. It was called Strawberry Hill School, and they've since taken it down. And my sister was in fourth grade, and my mother was a widow, so she went to work and everything. And I guess it was just inborn that I was a compulsive overeater. So was my father, who had passed away. He didn't pass away of obesity, but he was very obese. when he, and before he got sick. So I have no doubt that that was part of my history, and that was a big part of it, because most of us in the family from that side are heavy or have a weight problem or food issues. My mother never had a food issue. That was another reason I think I ate to spite her. I know I ate to spite her. She could never accept the fact that my sister and I were fat. That was the way she used to put it. She couldn't stand fat. Couldn't stand fat people. Couldn't stand, she loved my father. He had died, but she couldn't stand that he was fat. And this is all that I heard my whole life. And I kept thinking, someday I'm going to escape this and I'm going to do whatever I want to do and I'll eat the way I want to eat. And I guess it started very early because when I was in kindergarten, that lunchbox called me from that windowsill because I knew what my grandmother had put in there. And my mother never put all that stuff in there. And the teacher said to me, she was so kind, and she said, Joan, are you sure that's your recess, honey? And I said, oh, yeah, yeah, that's my recess. She says, it just seems like a lunch. And I said, no, I have a lunch. And even so young, I lied. I really did. I did. I mean, my stepfather years later used to say, you know, you stretch the truth. I'm not going to say you're a liar, Joan, but you do stretch the truth. And I did. I always did. I have always stretched the truth, and that's something I found out about me in this program as well. So, all right, when lunchtime came and I didn't have lunch, I cried. I mean, who'd be hungry from 10:30 till noon, but I cried, and I said, I have no lunch. And my sister was in fourth grade, and they made her share her lunch. And she, also being a compulsive overeater, was behind me, poking me in the back, saying, you brat, rotten brat, Grandma gave us that lunch, and now you made me share it with you, you pig. I shared it, I ate it, and I went, I don't care. I can remember living my life like that. But my sister and I had a lot of responsibility in the fact that my mother worked. She was not home much, so we did everything. And I have to say my sister really is older. She did most. I was lazy. I always wanted the easier way. And we knew that. You know, Marion got to wash the dishes. I got to dry them and complain because washing was more fun. But I had the little crap jobs. But I also took the easy way out. I knew that. So that was another hallmark of my personality. I knew that I did that. I knew that I wanted it my way. So Marion and I would have a lot of chores around the house, and we had to cook. And we had to shop and do things. And I really, at a very young age, used to steal money from my mother's bank and go food shopping. And I would buy things to eat, and I would eat them on the way home. I had my little ways. I was in Brownies, and I remember she was a secretary, and she had a jar on her desk, and she said, take your dues, which was a nickel, and I'd slip my hand in, and I would take more than my dues, because I knew I was going out. I was in second grade, you know, and second graders, you know, I don't know, maybe today they're a little more savvy. I wasn't savvy about anything else except that. I can remember collecting money for the Boy Scouts, and my mother was ferocious. She was ferociously honest about things like that. And I remember collecting money for the Boy Scouts, and it didn't occur to me right away that I would keep it. But it did occur to me after a while when I wasn't turning it into the lady a few blocks away because I just didn't make the time to do it. So it was in the drawer, and I kept thinking, they don't even know how much is there because I had to go around to different houses, and I had put the money in the bag, and I started to spend it. Well, I mean, like a kid, I guess I was 10 years old, and the woman called my mother. And she said, didn't your daughter collect for the Boy Scouts? And I never got the envelope. Well, of course, I nearly got murdered. And I had to return the envelope from the Boy Scouts. And she says, and you will go up to the door, and you will tell her. You will tell her the truth about what you did. I wasn't doing that. I went up to the door, rang the bell, hid in the bushes, and put the envelope in the tree bark outside, and I ran. I never saw her again, and I really liked her. I did. I did like the woman. And this is all the compromises I felt I made as I look back on my life. My life was insane, and I really never knew it. I skated along through a lot of things, skated through school and a lot of things. If I didn't want to do something, I didn't do it. If I got a bad mark, I didn't care. I was never, ever, ever happy, but it was always going to change. It was going to change someday because I was going to lose weight, and when I lost weight, I would be perfect. It would be good. It would be good. So, of course, I dated, and I lost weight to date, and whatever, you know, it was just fine. And And then I started to work. I was going to college. I didn't have any money, and I didn't appreciate the fact that I was going to college, and I was, my mother was paying for it, but I never had any money. And I didn't want to work. I didn't want to go onto campus and work. I wanted to eat. That's what I wanted to do. And yet at the time, you didn't dare eat, and then the guys were there, and it's like the girls were throwing their food away, or they said, oh, I couldn't eat another bite. I could have eaten, you know, got in line four times, but I couldn't. And they were going to the student union, and they were eating, and I had a friend who had a lot of money, and her father, my roommate, her father was a heart surgeon, and she was the only child, and he would, I guess, play cards or something and give her the jar of quarters to bring back. So she said I could help myself anytime. So, do I have to tell you what I did? Yeah, I did help myself anytime. And she said to me, my quarters are disappearing. And I said, yeah, you know, I guess I borrowed a few or whatever. I always, that was that, you know, if it wasn't an out and out lie, it was like, there goes your integrity. And I did that, and I did, and that was my pattern. I would get the usual things from people like, boy, you know, you're really putting on weight. And I would lose weight. And I had this best friend, and we both decided we would quit college at the same time. After 2 years, we were quitting. This was it. And I said to my mother, I'm not doing this. I'm going to go. I'm coming home. I'll go to college from home. And she said to me, okay, fine. You could do that. Because I just about almost flunked out. I was on probation because I had no inner direction to do the work when I got there. I didn't want to do it. And I looked at people that were so inner directed, these people that had struggled to get there, they worked jobs, they paid for it, and I kept like feeling worse and worse about myself because like, who are you? You know, like, but I never appreciated, never thought about it. I felt sorry for me because I didn't have what I thought the world had. And that was again that pity, that poor me, that just what I found out from being in these rooms. I wasn't very likable. So I came home and I said, I'll go to school at night. And she said, well, if you're going at night, you're going to work during the day. Okay. I didn't want to. I had to work. I got a job. I was very happy. I worked at the hospital and I had to be there at 8:30. And again, Joan was going to tell people at a punch the time clock, I really can't get there until about 9. And she said, no, you have to punch the clock from 8:30 to 4:30 and then go to school at night. And I said, I'll try. I had a really nice boss who let me go. See, it was very nice because then I could punch in a little bit later and I could leave a little bit later or whatever. And that was my pattern, and I didn't know that. I didn't know that at the time. And while I was in the hospital, of course, I was putting on weight. I weighed 160, then I weighed 190, then I weighed 220. And I worked in the radiology department, and the radiologist said to me, you have a problem with food. And I had never heard that, and I thought, who are you to say I have a problem with food? I don't even know you. Well, I would ask him for pills. And he said to me, okay, I'll give you a prescription for diet pills, but I'm going to tell you that you have a problem with food. So I took the diet pills, and of course, I lost dramatically, and I was up, I mean, I was at work on time because I was flying, and I was the best I could be, and I was getting all the reports out and doing this and driving to school and just happy until I had to go to sleep at night. And then I had to go to sleep, so I started with Excedrin PM. Okay. So I did the Excedrin PM. Then I'd be so sleepy in the morning, I'd be like, you know, and my mother would say, you have to get up. You're supposed to be at work, and I'd be like, don't bother me. And that whole thing again until that slides down, either you need more to keep going and you get higher and higher, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. All the outside methods never worked. I tried them. I tried them forever. So then I said, okay, I did graduate. That was nice. I was thrilled. I got a job. And for 1 month, I guess I was in about a size 12 dress. And, I just felt like I was all that. I mean, I had this job. I was in this, you know, thing. And I met my husband that I'm married to. We just passed 43-year anniversary on Thursday. So thank you, God. And we have a delightful, delightful marriage. Now, I used to say that he was the best guy on earth. But actually, what he did was he didn't bother me. You know, he was the best guy on earth in a lot of ways. But he didn't bother me. He never said I had to lose weight. He didn't care how the house looked. He didn't this, he didn't that. He's in his own world. God love him. He's an egghead, and he's good. He's really good, and I love him to death, but I couldn't get used to that. That this is like, I'm expecting to get married. I have this career and whatever it is, and now I'm going to be off into the sunset, you know, like this wonderful marriage. And I remember saying to him, which, again, it's like so bad. I just love Rosano Brazzi in movies, and I just love Marion Alonso. Do you think he could sing like that? He's like, no, he's not the type. Let me tell you, he's not the type. So he'd say, no, I don't think I could do that. I don't even like to dance. And then I started to think, maybe I'm not happy here. So, of course, what would come in to a compulsive overeater's life? And I love the definition for compulsive overeating. And I wrote it, an impulse control disorder consisting of persistent failure to resist the urge to eat, despite serious consequences to the extent that personal and vocational life are seriously disrupted. So that definition certainly fit me, because life wasn't what I thought it should be, because it wasn't all that much fun, okay, because I had to grow up, and I wasn't growing up very well. Then it was everybody else's fault. So I decided that what would be nice would be to have a baby, because if we had a baby, then that would fix everything. So, of course, started all the events where I had our daughter, and I weighed 254 pounds or 252 pounds. I remember going to the gynecologist, and I had told this story before when I shared it, that he was retiring that year, and he was an old Italian doctor, and I just really liked him a lot, but he was very outspoken. And I remember going to him at 3 months and wearing maternity clothes, and he said to me, what are you doing? You know, with all the women right there. You have maternity clothes on. He said, you're just fat. They're not showing by now. And I was like, oh, you know, your first baby, you want to wear maternity clothes and look pregnant. Towards the end, when I was there, and I was 252 pounds or whatever it was, he weighed me in his office with the curtain there with my husband out front and all these women that were very pregnant. And he said, oh my God, 252 pounds. And I went, he says, oh, what is he, blind? And I was like, oh my God. And then I had to go out in front of all these women, and it was awful. It was so humiliating. So, okay, I decided I would lose weight. And I remember the nerve of me. My sister and I were pregnant exactly the same time, and she delivered 3 weeks later. And she weighed 240. She weighed 252. I weighed 248. I'm sorry. I had that wrong for the 4 pounds. And I remember she said to me, she came back. We had the same doctor. And she said to me, oh, God, I'm 252 pounds. And I said, oh, you are? Oh, my God. Wait, didn't you tell me you're 248? Oh, we're splitting hairs? And I said, well, I didn't go over 250. So that was like, yeah, that was good, Joan. That was real good. Okay, so we fast forward then to Joan's weight loss schemes that weren't. And I had Liz, and I cooked. Tom said, I want you to stay home. He was very good. I'll work. You stay home, he said, and you be the mother, I'll support you, and that'll be that. And wasn't that perfect? Except that I had no friends, and I had nothing else except my best friend. And I did that all day long. And I had to go back and forth through checkups and doctors, long story short, the whole thing. And as that happened, and we would go out with other friends, and I would feel horrible about myself. I came to be 300 pounds. So the one thing the doctor said to me, but this time I had another doctor, because the other one retired, thank God. And this other one was very sweet. And he said, I don't want you to get pregnant again, not at 300 pounds. And I said, why? And he said, because I'm going to have a hard time delivering your baby. He said, it's not that I don't think you could take care of the baby. Because I said, I could take care of the baby. He said, you might have a heart attack and die. I said, oh, not me. So, of course, I went on to have our son, and he'll be 39 years old the end of March. Okay. So it went from bad to worse there, because from one humiliation to another, now we had these two children, and I had this album going around where I had a leopard cape. I looked like a leopard. Why would you, at 300 pounds, wear a leopard cape? I made it for Easter. And I had this enormous leopard cape, but it was always to cover up, to cover up, to cover up. I hated who I was. I hated it. I couldn't do anything about it. About 1974, somebody told me about OA. So I went to Rahway Hospital to the OA meeting. I didn't like that either. When the student is ready, the teacher appears, as they say. I didn't like that. Nobody was friendly. Everybody wasn't thin. There were fat people there. They were hugging. They were friendly with each other. Nobody said a word to me. So, of course, I left, and I said to some of my friends that thought the program was stupid anyway, oh, that OA program. They said, oh, you don't want that. That's crazy stuff. They pray. They do this. They do that. Well, let me tell you, life did not get any better. I went on after that to say, how could you be in program and on a food plan, and how could I ever give up food and get pregnant? And I want more children. We wanted four children. So came along 1975, and I became pregnant, and that was by the grace of God, and that was a miracle. I have to say, even though we laughed a few years later and said some miracle with the twins, we had twins, and they weren't easy. So that was my miracle, but that really was, because I knew at my weight that was not happening, and that was another distraction. I was going to have something else to distract me from what the real issues were in my life, was the fact that I wasn't happy. And I thought things should make me happy. People should make me happy. If I didn't have the right house, I was crazy with looking at houses and furniture and what we didn't have and how could I get what we didn't have, and I didn't go to work and I couldn't fit into clothes. I was just not nice. So I had the twins and I said, okay, I lost weight because something was going wrong in the pregnancy. I didn't know I was having twins. There was no ultrasound. And the pictures in there in 1976 Easter show me, and the doctor said to me, your weight is perfect, which is never, that never happens. Your weight at 250 pounds is never perfect. But from 300, I had gone on a toxemia diet. So I knew I could diet. And that was something that maybe may have been the wrong message for my brain, because I thought to myself, I can do this. When I have a reason to lose weight, I can do this. I wanted that pregnancy so badly that I did not want to do anything to jeopardize it. So I lost weight, and then I delivered these two, God love them, and 7.5 pounds each. So you knew that they were big babies, a lot of baby. And the doctor said to me, you are doing so well, because after I delivered them, I mean, you have to lose 15 pounds of baby plus all the other. He said, just keep going from here. That's not happening with a compulsive overeater. I'm not going from here, because that night, I said to my husband, go to the coffee shop. So he said, why? He's so clueless. Why? I said, because I haven't eaten all these months. I worried. I said, go, get me stuff. He says, what? Like what? Everything. Well, they let you stay in the hospital at that time for a week. The doctor said to me, oh, he said, you know what? You can stay an extra day. He said, that's free. That's on us. They don't do that anymore. I had 4 days plus a fifth. I was a queen. They fed them. They fed me. I was happy. I went home, and boom, the work started. Life started again. And I thought, well, I'm this weight now. I'm going to stay here. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything. What I did was I put on so much weight that when I went back to my beloved gynecologist, I weighed 320 pounds. And he said to me, ah, Joan. And I said, I know it's bad. And he said, yeah, it is. And I was so, I was hurt. And I said, I know. So I tried diet pills again. I gave them back. I said, this is not working. And I decided at that point in my mind, and it must have been my absolute bottom, what I could ever have done, that I would just die. I didn't want to die. I had all these thoughts in my head, but as I said, yeah, my high drama. I said, okay, what will you do? You're just not, and I already had wives picked out for my husband. Like, I would say to him, if I die, I want you to marry so-and-so so they can raise the kids. He said, God, That's how powerless. I had no idea what that was about. I don't ever want that powerlessness. And by God's grace, in 1981, my friend Eileen asked me, and I was about 335 pounds. We had a family weight club. Let me tell you who the biggest weight was in the family weight club. They were all on Weight Watcher or whatever it was, and they brought two scales. I don't even remember if that worked. That's how embarrassing that was, because our bathroom scales went up to 300, and I knew I wasn't fitting on that. So they brought two, and they said, why don't you stand on two, and we'll read it. I don't even know if that works. I'd like to try that sometime. I don't know. Anybody ever try that? I would like to do it sometime and see. I couldn't see. I had that muumuu on that I wore everywhere. That muumuu took me to people's parties. I had friends that had this, not a friend that's here today, another friend that had an above-the-ground pool. We talked about this one day, about pools and pool ladders and watching people go, pool ladders, okay. But the smallest things, I had a friend in Colonia who had four children, twins same age as mine. She had a bunch of girlfriends and their husbands that used to come for pool parties. And what are you going to wear to a pool party when you're 335 pounds and everybody else is in size 5 shorts? You know, these things make your life so unmanageable and become the sum total of your day. It's not like normal people where you can walk in and out, you put your boots on, you take your coat, you go, and you think about what normal people do in a day. They go to work. They do things. They clean. They're active. No matter how active you try to be, you can't be anonymous when you're in a size 52 dress. And I used to hate my life. And my friend said to me in 1981, come with me to OA. And I always say that my first thought was, she must think I'm fat. Well, my other friend had folded one of my nightgowns and asked me, while she was folding, is this a crib sheet? She didn't see that it was my nightgown. So, of course, those things stay with you. All the embarrassments, the humility, the horror stays. But when I came into the rooms, I found a miracle. I didn't find it right away. I guess I was ready. I had two dresses that fit me. I was ready to die, and I said, I don't care. I'm just going to die. If this doesn't work, nothing works, and I'm done. I'm just done. And I wrote a poem today to finish what I'm saying, because it's not always been all recovery. I'm not a super person. I'm not a superhero. I'm not a superstar. I started in 1981. I lost, by 1983, 220 pounds. I didn't really worry about the big book. I worried about the tools. I worried about sponsoring. I worried about having all of these people that depended on me or I depended on them. I didn't worry about the big book. I didn't remember that the first three steps of the big book, as they say, where I wrote it down here, I always have it with me, the first three steps, let me get it, are to give up. Just give up, Joan. Give up that will. The next 4, 5, and 6 are to clean up. Clean up your act. Get a little more honest. Start taking responsibility for yourself and for things that you are guilty of. That's stretching that truth. Make up to people. And I sent a letter off this morning to a person. I knew it was coming. I don't think there was any coincidence. But this week, I really wanted to write a letter to somebody that I have been wanting to make amends to for years. I just didn't know how to say it. And I sent it off this morning. Not that it makes me so wonderful, but it's one more step to being here and to feeling like I'm cemented into these rooms. And the last three are just to grow up. I need to grow up. So I wrote a Unity Day poem to finish up. And when I came here, I was 39 years old. And I said, at age 39, tired and blue, I crawled into OA because what else could I do? I sat in the back in my black fake fur coat, hunched up like a bear, alone and remote. Tears sprang up quickly. I was so full of shame. But a woman looked over and began to explain. Hey, why are you crying? You're here at long last. Do something about it. Get up off your ass. She was about 75, then she did. God love her. A little unorthodox, I now have to say, but her words never left me for even a day. A feisty old lady still weighing her food, 100-plus loser, my hope was renewed. At age 39, 1981, something miraculous had finally begun. Several years had gone by, one after another. God, as my partner, helped me to recover. I would always remember when telling my story, only to God could I give all the glory. Then came some rough years. My commitment got lazy, connections to people, and the 12 steps got hazy. But God, no doubt, had other plans for me. Come back, help others, and I'll help you be free. I no longer fear people, situations unknown. No longer self-seeking, have I finally grown? These rooms give us hope. Just follow your dream. You'll get a new feeling. It's called self-esteem. Endurance, patience, tolerance, and love. All these are gifts with help from above. I came to lose weight, to stop eating all day, found emotional sanity through a spiritual way. Most of us come here filled with great sorrow. Just try it OA's way for a blessed tomorrow. Don't give in to food and forget the debating. Start working the steps. The miracle is waiting. Thank you.